This is Railbird Central on CheeseheadTV.com. It's Friday. It's May 27th, Memorial Day weekend. Happy Memorial Day weekend, everyone. And we're going to be talking some Green Bay Packers football, as usual, once again here. Joining us later today, later this hour, at the bottom of the hour, 8:30 a.m., Al Bracco of allgreenbaypackers.com. Our friend Al Bracco will join us. If you want to comment, question, make some snide remarks, anything you want to say, feel free to tweet with the hashtags Railbird or the hashtags CheeseheadTV, just as our friend David Midwest Fan did on our live blog right now, or feel free to use the Twitter widget underneath the broadcast player. Or feel free to call into the show. The phone number is area code 646-797-2909. Anytime you want to call in, feel free. Let's get right to it. A lot in the news today. Our lead story in today's Packers Daily Links. I left a link to the Packer Daily Links at the top of the live blog if you scroll up. The offensive line is gathering for informal workouts. If you click this link, it provides you to a webpage at ESPN.com from NFC North blogger Kevin Seifert, talking about, informal workouts all throughout the NFC North, but the one in particular that we're leading with today is one with the Green Bay Packers offensive line. It says here, quote, Green Bay Packers guard Josh Sitton tweeted that the Packers offensive line soon will gather in Nashville to work out together. Two of their starters, center Scott Wells and left tackle Chad Clifton, have Tennessee roots. So, Packers offensive line gathering soon. I think I saw in the comments section at Cheesehead TV that this would be occurring from Sunday through Wednesday. I have no way to confirm that, but I have no reason to doubt it either. This news came from Josh Sitton via his Twitter account. And so it just kind of looks like the offensive line gathering to, I don't know what they're doing, lifting weights, working out. You know, I don't know how much they can do, really. I suppose it's just more than anything a camaraderie thing, a bonding experience for them to share. You know, and not that they're not going to work out. I'm sure they will. You know, I just, without a coach guiding them, you know, without the facilities of an NFL practice field and all the equipment that comes with it, you may need blocking pads, sleds, etc. You know, I just don't know how much they'll do. You know, not that you need a blocking sled to do everything and a coach to do everything. You know, I'm sure they'll do stuff, but you know, how deep into it they get, it's really hard to say. Lots of news about player workouts today. And I have a point to probably rambling I'll get to eventually as I get through a lot of the workout news here early in the show. If we go back to the Daily Links, the second story down is also about another group working out. You click the link, it takes you to, the San Diego Union Tribune? Something like that. And signonsandiego.com, which I believe is owned by the San Diego Union Tribune. Yeah, I'm correct, it is. And so a group of Packers getting together in California, where I think most of them are from, namely cornerback Jarrett Bush, linebacker Brandon Chiller, wide receiver Brett Swain, and getting together with one of their former teammates, defensive lineman Anthony Toribio, who's actually currently with the Kansas City Chiefs. But, getting together, working out, and they're working with a personal trainer in California. Some comments I found interesting, and I commented the same thing on the Daily Links, if you read that. But Brandon Chiller saying, quote, I'll read his quote here. It's one paragraph long. If I can find it. Here we go. Brandon Chiller says, quote, you've got to earn your keep in the NFL. You get lackadaisical and there's somebody ready to take your job. I'm training like I'm a young guy. Brandon Chiller's 28. I've had 6 surgeries while I've been in my 20s. I feel I have 3 more years in me at least. That's why I'm here. You can run gassers all day, but they don't get you in football shape. I guess the point I was going to make here was that Brandon Chiller saying he's got 3 more years left in him. He's 28 now. He says he's got at least 3 years. I should point that out, be proper. You know, I'm probably examining this perhaps a little bit too much, a little bit too in-depth. But for a guy like Brandon Chiller to say he's got at least 3 years, doesn't that seem like, you know, he's not very confident? I don't, or he's just, you know, ready to be done with the NFL? I don't know. It just, you don't hear that from people who's still, you know, Brandon Chiller's not a rookie anymore, but he's still, you know, relatively young. You would think most guys would want to play until they're at least their late 30s, if their body holds up on them and they're allowed to. You just don't see people saying, like, you know, I'll be done by 31. You know, again, and he did say at least 3 years, meaning he probably and possibly has more. But you know, it just struck me as a little bit odd that he'd say something like that. Again, and that's probably just me. No doubt about it. If you watch the video, and maybe I could even play a little bit of it here, as I'm sure it'll take a long time to load, as usual. But the Packers here have Brett Swain had commented during this video that he actually went out and bought a jugs machine during the lockout so he could catch passes from, you know, with a decent velocity, I suppose. He did mention he has worked out occasionally with Aaron Rodgers, who, you know, they both live in California. I don't know exactly how close they are to each other, but semi near each other at least. I don't think I'm going to play the whole thing here, but let's see if we can't listen in just a little bit to this video report.
You know, a group of about 15 to 20 locked out NFL players right now.
We have 6 Green Bay Packers who are Super Bowl champions. We have a couple Raiders out here, a couple Chiefs, a couple Seahawks. We have a couple Jaguars.
Right now, we'd probably be back in Green Bay. You know, we're getting ready to, you know, approach the time where we would be doing OTAs, on-the-field workouts with the team.
We'd have helmets on, just helmets, but we'd be going through a lot of, you know, team plays and offense and defense and pretty much practicing without pads.
Well, my belief is that these guys, if the lockout's lifted and a new deal struck, they need to be ready to go back to work the next day. So my job, I feel, is to have them prepared to play football tomorrow if something happens, or the next week if something happens, because teams are going to get these guys back and say, hey, we've missed out on 2 months of work. We got to get to work.
You know, just staying in shape and basically going through the movements that I would be doing on the field with these helmets. You know, with Doug, instead of just running in straight lines and getting in cardio shape, we're doing cuts and breaks that simulate what we do if we're practicing. So that way when we get on.
And that's good enough for right now, rather than devoting half the show to the video. No, it only lasts about 3 minutes long. But, you know, just interesting to see, to hear some Packers working out on their own in California. If you would have continued to watch, Brett Swain would have talked a little bit more about the jugs machine and stuff like that. And I encourage you to watch it if you have the time. And one more group here of workouts, informal player workouts. Punter Tim Maste, been working out. We've seen this story before. I've had it in the Packers Daily Links. Working out with Mason Crosby at St. Norbert College near Green Bay, right next to Green Bay in De Pere, Wisconsin. If you click the link, he'll take you to Packer Report. And yeah, this is a subscription required website here. But if you happen to have the subscription, you find out that Tim Maste didn't have any footballs of his own. Of course, why would you when you're an NFL player? The Green Bay Packers probably have 500 footballs in their facility, and you don't really need all that many. Not that he didn't own any footballs, but you know, he had to go, you know, to buy some footballs to work out. As the quote goes here in the article, I didn't take any footballs with me before the lockout, and then once that happened, we couldn't go up there and get any, said Maste. So I went to the pro shop and bought about 5 footballs. So here's an NFL player having to go buy footballs. Actually went to the Packer pro shop, went to Lambeau Field. I wonder if they felt odd about letting him in. So here's the all sorts of Packers working out informally. While not all together, all at once, the whole team, you know, we've got a group of them, you know, the offensive linemen. We got the group that lives out in California. We've got the specialists working right here in Green Bay. We've had, how many workouts have we heard about? Pardon me. Over time, you know, we got Mike Neal and Tom Crabtree and Brian Bulaga. They, you know, we heard that months ago how they were working out the House of Speed in Green Bay. You know, who else have we heard about? Greg Jennings inviting Randall Cobb to work out in Arizona with Larry Fitzgerald of the Arizona Cardinals. I mean, so we've heard about all these workouts. When I personally was at the Milwaukee Brewers home opener and they had all the players throwing out the first pitch and, you know, all those guys were asked, what are they doing? And, you know, Nick Collins had said he'd been working out in his native Florida, and Desmond Bishop had been working out, I believe, in Arizona it was as well, and et cetera, et cetera. I mean, there's been so many instances of all this going on. And so, you know, that brings me back to today's Packers Daily Links. And after all these reports of all these, you know, informal kind of workouts, we've got this from TotalPackers.com, Monty McMahon. And if you click this, I'll bring up the webpage right here. There we go. And I'll just read a little bit. You know, the title is Packers Might Have Super Bowl Hangover. And what they write here is, quote, every team coming off a Super Bowl win experiences some sort of hangover. The players are partying, making personal appearances, getting their faces in the media, and partaking in all kinds of stupid promotional and commercial endeavors. In other words, while everyone else is getting back to football, the players on the Super Bowl winning team are standing around, getting pats on the back, and forgetting about the hard work that took them to reach the pinnacle of their sport to begin with. I personally thought this was a little, you know, overly critical, overly harsh. You know, it's not that we haven't heard of the, quote, Super Bowl hangover in any sport. You hear about this, the World Series hangover, the Stanley Cup hangover, et cetera, any team that wins a championship. But I just don't believe, you know, I have no reason to believe this is really true, you know, that they're going to be affected for the worse at any pace because of this. You know, So they're making promotional, for many, especially of the high profile players, they're going to be, making promotional appearances anyway. Your Aaron Rodgers, your Clay Matthews, your Greg Jennings, the highest profile players on the team who have endorsements and things like that. And, they're doing the talk show circuit. And, for the most part, things like that are over. You know, we saw some guys doing Jay Leno or David Letterman. I forget exactly who did what back, 3 months ago. But, I think is unfair. In fact, the caption here at Total Packers with Aaron Rodgers and who is that? Marissa Miller? I forget what her name is. Doesn't she work for TMZ or something? I could be mistaken, but the caption says maybe a little less broad wrangling and a little more working out, hey Aaron. And it was actually pretty much the opposite that went on. It was the girl actually seeking out Aaron Rodgers and not Aaron Rodgers seeking out the girl. So, I think it's unfair to paint these guys in a picture like that they might be, not working out or whatever. Because as I've just, basically pointed out here over the first 10, 15 minutes of the show, so many guys are working out. Yes, they're not doing it in a team environment. And as has been pointed out earlier this week, I forget where, the Packers are like only one or two or three teams in the NFL that have not worked out as an entire team. To that I say big deal. And it's probably going to happen when they're all come to Green Bay for this ring ceremony here next month, in a couple weeks. It wouldn't surprise me at all to see them all gather and work out or something like that. And where they're going to do it in Green Bay, I have no clue. Maybe they'll go to St. Norbert College where the specialists are hanging out or something. I don't know. They can't work out at Lambeau Field or the Don Hudson Center or whatever. But, as long as the guys are staying in shape, that's all I care about. As a fan, that's all I would care about. If they're staying in shape, doing that. Because, what more can you do without coaches? The coaches are everything. They hold everything together. They have, that's why they're paid the big bucks. Not as much as the players, but that's their specialty is teaching and organizing, not even just the coaches, but the equipment people, of which a NFL team has numerous employees in their equipment department. So, David said, staying in shape and staying out of trouble. That as well. As long as they stay out of trouble, that's fine too. And in fact, that brings up, thank you very much, David, for bringing that. That brings up a good point, doesn't it? Here coming off the Super Bowl, when perhaps they're a little more prone to party. You remember last offseason? Weren't there like three fairly big incidents? We had the Brandon Underwood accused of, wasn't he accused of rape? It kind of ended up being, a little more complicated than that. There was prostitutes involved, etc. And, that Underwood had said it was consensual. Anyway, it turned out to be probably a little bit overblown, but he was fined. And it got a lot of attention at the time, that's for sure. And then, of course, the whole Johnny Jolly thing last summer. Johnny Jolly being suspended by the NFL, having all these court appearances, now he's in jail. But this goes back for years with Johnny Jolly. But, there's that, and then there was Spencer Havener, tight end Spencer Havener, in the alleged drunk driving motorcycle accident. And again, I'm not sure anything ever became of, you know, the drunk driving. I think he was, again, accused of that, but he was never formally charged with it, something like that. But, you know, regardless, he gets in a motorcycle accident and breaks, what was it, a clavicle? I forget exactly. So we've got all these incidents last year, and, you know, by comparison, it almost seems like they're, you know, staying and, you know, not getting into these incidents this year. So, yeah, I just don't believe it. You know, for Total Packers, I understand that there's a point made about the Super Bowl hangover. It's not like Total Packers was unique in pointing that out. We've heard that before, but, you know, I think it you know, it's perhaps not fair. You know, it's okay to wonder about it, I suppose, but to actually say that this is, you know, could be happening, I think is a little bit premature. So, you know, that I suppose that's one point I'm getting to today. You know, and again, the next article in the Daily Links, I'm not going to pull up the Daily Links again, but I'll show this quick article here. More about workouts here, and from Acme Packing Company, you know, why player workouts aren't that important for the Packers. You know, it's, and it's weird how I feel about this. It's, I feel like almost every media outlet out there, Acme Packing Company not being alone, has to point out how, like, player workouts aren't that important, and you know, to an extent, they're right. You know, it's almost gone overboard, the amount of attention on workouts. And, you know, I suppose, I mean, it's with this lockout going on and no formal practice to cover, I mean, this is, you know, if you're a media outlet covering the Packers, covering the NFL, this is the only thing to cover, player workouts. So, you know, they're not that important. I almost feel like it's, do we almost even have to point that out? Isn't that common knowledge? I suppose it's not. I suppose you have to state, you know, the obvious sometimes to the casual fan who doesn't, you know, perhaps, you know, the people who aren't watching Railbird Central at 8 o'clock a.m. Central Time on Cheesehead TV, the hardcores like us. I would imagine the hardest of hardcores are watching this show. You've got to be a real hardcore fan to listen to me ramble on like this. Sometimes I don't know why you guys do it. No, I enjoy doing it, but, you know, it's like I said, it almost doesn't have to be said. You know, AJ Hawk had said there a couple weeks back that player workouts were a disaster, was the quote, the exact word he used, a disaster. And, you know, for a NFL player getting paid, you know, millions of dollars and used to an NFL facility where you've got all the proper weight and conditioning equipment, a huge weight room with every machine and free weight you could possibly imagine and want to use, and all the equipment you need, pads, blocking sleds, things like that. I mean, and those are great things. And by all means, those are things they should use and should have if you're an NFL team. But, you know, I you know, are they a disaster? I think that might be hyperbole by AJ Hawk. I see nothing wrong with players getting together, working out. It can't hurt as long as they're not overexerting themselves and doing something they shouldn't be and actually hurting themselves. You know, contact, tackling, things like that. But, you know, it's fine. Go out, work out, bond, you know, do it together, do it as groups, do it as an entire team. I don't mind. That's all great stuff. You know, I it's not a big deal if they don't work out as an entire team. Not at all. As long as they, as David said, they stay in shape and stay out of trouble. Everybody's happy, you know, while this lockout's going on. Obviously, once the lockout's over, whenever that happens, and they can work out as a team at the facility, and there's an agreement in place, and there's coaches there, you know, totally different animal then. We're getting near the bottom of the hour. After we take a break, we'll be talking to Al Bracco of allgreenbaypackers.com. You know, I should mention here, haven't brought it up yet, one of the other important stories of the day. The ring ceremony has been announced for the Green Bay Packers. The Super Bowl ring ceremony will be held on June 16th in the Lambeau Field atrium. And before we go to break, I'm sorry if this goes beyond a little beyond 8:30 here. I wanted to get this out of the way as well. I've seen a couple comments. I've seen them on Twitter and in the comment section at Cheesehead TV, and it hasn't been a lot, but it's been a few people saying the Packers should open this event up to shareholders. I get the sentiment. You own the team. But, you know, here's where I'm at with that. This is not something that should be perhaps opened up to shareholders, okay? Right now, it's being held in the Lambeau Field atrium, a little more intimate event that, you know, can hold a couple hundred people. And when you're talking about the entire team, the entire coaching staff, front office, and employees of the Packers, I mean, that is a couple hundred people right there. That's no small group right there when you add all these people up. And this deserves to be an intimate event, a dinner that is, you know, very nicely catered. You know, perhaps, I don't know if it's a black tie event, but, you know, a very nice event that has tablecloths on the tables. An event like this deserves to be intimate like that. You open it up to shareholders, okay, it's no longer, you know, small enough to be held in the atrium anymore. You probably have to have it in Lambeau Field. And really, how many shareholders are going to come to this? I'm sure there will be hundreds, maybe even thousands. But how many thousand? Two? Three? Maximum? So you've got a stadium that seats 70 plus thousand people, and you've got 2,000 people in the stands. Okay, so you're playing, you're going to have this event in a stadium that's about a tenth full. It's what's that doing? You know, that is nothing special, you know. This does deserve to be an intimate event. What should happen in order to get the shareholders, the fans, the season ticket holders involved? It should be televised. It should be webcasted somehow, some way. I think that would be very nice. You know, something, you know, that's somewhat discreet, you know. Hopefully they have a MC involved, you know, get Wayne Larrivee involved somehow, perhaps, to MC the event and see all this happen. But this should be, you know, as I've said, an intimate affair. So this shouldn't be something that I think is necessarily open to the shareholders, as has been suggested. So that's where I am with that event. And with that, it's 8:30. We're going to take a break here. When we come back, I'm going to get Al Bracco of allgreenbaypackers.com on the line. Hang on.
This is Darren College, and you're watching Cheesehead TV.
Welcome back to Railbird Central here on CheeseheadTV.com, and joining me right now on the phone is Al Bracco of AllGreenBayPackers.com. Al, how are you doing this morning?
Good morning, Brian. I'm doing fine. Pleasure to be on.
Fantastic to have you. We're having Al on as kind of a feature here over the past this week and next week with some of the writers at AllGreenBayPackers.com, and eventually featuring writers all across the Packers blogosphere. But Al, we've talked before, but kind of resetting the whole entire conversation here back to the beginning. You know, tell everybody a little bit about yourself, what you do for a living, and perhaps how you got involved in blogging.
All right. Well, as the name implies, I'm Jersey born, bred, and lived, never been anywhere else. First became a Packers fan back in Super Bowl I. It's the first game that I remember watching completely on television. I was probably 10 years old at the time, so it had an impression on me. And actually, Packers came back and won it again the next year, so when you're 10-year-old impressionable kid, you tend to go with the winners, so I became a Packers fan. Stayed with them even through, you know, the lean years that followed after the first couple of Super Bowls. And then as I got to high school age and played a little football myself, my high school coach actually had a Vince Lombardi connection. He was actually at St. Cecilia High School where Vince Lombardi had coached, so we used to get a few Vince Lombardi stories thrown into us, and including a few, you know, halftime or pregame motivational speeches that I'm sure were stolen right from Vince Lombardi. So, that kind of kept my fandom for the Packers going. And at that point, you know, when I decide on a team, I'm loyal for life. So that's where I am now.
So, New Jersey, I mean, that doesn't come to mind, perhaps, as the first place a Packers fan would be. I mean, was there ever any influence on the Jets or the Giants on you at all?
Well, of course, there's influence, but, you know, as I said, when I make up my mind and I back a team, it's for life. I mean, every other team that I follow in every other sport is a local team here. It's really the Packers are the only ones that are not a local team. And you'd be surprised by how many Packer fans there really are, especially of my age who remember the Lombardi era, you know, being that he was a local here and actually very close to where I live. There are a lot of Packer fans my age that started the same way I did. So when you go to a Jets game or a Giants game here, you see a lot of green and gold. You really do.
So now the blogging end of it, AllGreenBayPackers.com, kind of tell me the origins of that and where you're at with that. Of course, we had Chad Toporsky on Tuesday and having a couple other of your guys next week.
Yeah, well, first of all, I appreciate that you're having the guys on. I'm really happy with the crew that I've assembled. But going back a little bit as to how I got started, I have to give credit to that lightning rod of a blog site out there, Bleacher Report. You know, the great thing about Bleacher Report is that anybody can get on there and start writing and have people read their stuff. The bad thing about Bleacher Report is the same thing. You know, so it really depends on the individual and whether they have any ability to write or not. Personally, I've always enjoyed writing, but never really had a creative outlet. You know, I was always, you know, I work in a very technical field, and I've done some technical writing, but, you know, never really thought I had the capability to write a novel or fiction or anything like that. But yet, I was always kind of a frustrated writer, so this kind of turned out to be a great outlet for me where I can write about factual things and things that I know and still, you know, get my writing fix out of it. So basically Bleacher Report got me started. This was really cool. I started getting a following there. I started my own little site. it soon grew to where I couldn't manage it myself anymore. So I said, hey, let me get some guys that I've been reading that I really like their stuff and see if they'd like to come on here. And we create more than just Jersey Al. We create all Green Bay Packers. And that's where we are right now.
You brought up before you got your start on Bleacher Report, and I think this would be an appropriate time, perhaps, what was it, 2 days ago, a Bleacher Report article got a little bit of attention in the Packers blogosphere because a writer was critical of Greg Bedard, the former Packers beat writer at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Greg had reported that, the Packers coaches have been, taking a pay cut or something like that. It turns out not to be true. And this writer took him to task. And, it was, in my opinion, kind of a joke that he'd be criticizing Greg Bedard. And the article itself was not a well-written one, and the one on Bleacher Report. So, as you said, what does the good outweigh the bad at a place like Bleacher Report?
Brian?
Yeah, are you there?
Yeah, you just cut out.
Oh, okay.
Repeat the question here.
I guess, we're talking about Bleacher
lesson
Report.
Was
does the good outweigh the bad? Where is Bleacher Report in the whole scheme of blogs? Because there are, I personally try to judge every article on its own merit, but there are articles like that seem to, bring that brand down quite a bit, and they happen fairly often.
Yeah, I personally, right now, I think that the bad outweighs the good. I don't think it necessarily was like that a few years ago, when we first started there. There were actually a lot of good writers there. A lot of people, names that you would know, Michael Shoddy, who actually now works for them. He's actually employed by them. Our own Alex Talish here, who's very sensitive about not being mentioned, that I did a stint on Packers Lounge. He used to be on there at one point before he blew up in flames on Bleacher Report. Right now, though, it's really more, they're really only worried about how many hits can we get, how many page views can we get. Let's do the slideshow articles where it requires people to click 8 times instead of 1 time to read the article. And that's really what it's become now. So right now, it's the worst. The bad definitely outweighs the good, but it wasn't always like that, is what I'll say in its defense.
Yeah, it is a touchy subject, and many people in the media have touched on this. It can be a good outlet, but, sometimes the amount of slideshows on there does get sickening. Let's talk Packers, Al. Recently, you wrote an article about perhaps the Packers having the best trio of cornerbacks in the NFL. Is that accurate? What's your opinion on the topic?
Yeah, the way that article came about is I was just over at Pro Football Focus, which is one of my favorite sites to read when I actually have a moment of free time. And, they were doing their rankings of cornerbacks, and they were looking at different statistics. And what really, stood out to me was two things. Was Sam Shields, how few times he was actually thrown at over the season. They did this whole ranking of times thrown at per coverage snap, and Shields came up number 9 on the list, which means there were only 8 cornerbacks in the league that were thrown at less than Sam Shields. And that, to me, red flag. Okay, that makes absolutely no sense. And I actually touched on this back in the first Philadelphia game, the first game of the season, when I hear you have Shields' first game ever as a rookie, very little defensive back experience, and the Eagles hardly even looked his way. And I remember writing at the time that I'd be really pissed if I were an Eagles fan. I'd demand to know, why didn't we attack Sam Shields? this kid who's out there for the first time. But and I predicted at the time that other coaches would not make the same mistake, but these results kind of prove that completely wrong. You know, throughout the whole season, teams did not go after Sam Shields. Ironically, the cornerback that they threw at the most was Tremont Williams, which, of course, you know, worked out great for us, because Williams probably showed the best coverage skills, without a doubt, of any of the Packers' cornerbacks. And Pro Football Focus had some other stats about that, where they did, what was it called, catch percentage per coverage snap, which basically was how often receivers make a catch in that cornerback's coverage area.
Mm-hmm.
And Tremont Williams was the seventh best in the league. Shields finished 27th and Woodson 38th. And looking at the other teams, there were no other teams that had three players that high, you know, within the top 40. So that's what kind of was the genesis for the article. You know, do we have the best trio? Now, we don't have the best duo. You know, teams like Oakland, they had two cornerbacks in the top five by the Pro Football Focus rankings, but they didn't have a third anywhere near. So if the question is, do we have the best trio? I think the answer is yes.
Yeah, it's certainly it's looking good for the Packers at the cornerback position. You kind of wonder sometimes, is Charles Woodson eventually, you know, due to become a safety in time? And, you know, what would the Packers do at cornerback then? Perhaps after the trio, there's a bunch of question marks with Pat Lee, Brandon Underwood, Jarrett Bush, and, you know, they drafted the new guy, Devon House. I mean, until that time comes, the Packers have a good one. Al, earlier this morning, maybe perhaps the last question here, we talked about player workouts, you know, informal ones, you know, the offensive line getting together, you know, quarterbacks and receivers throwing the ball, 7-on-7, stuff like that. Do the Packers need to do this? Do you think they need to get together as a team and work out, or where do you fall along those lines?
Yeah, we're talking about professionals here, you know. I mean, if coaches were involved, then the more workouts, the better, from my standpoint, which you know, I've had disagreements with Aaron Nagler on that one, who thinks that all these off-season workouts are way too much. I have the opposite approach. But if we're just talking about a couple of guys throwing a ball around the field, you know, hey, that's great if they want to do it. If they don't want to do it, I couldn't care less. You know, there isn't that much of a benefit. I'd rather have them working with a personal trainer and lifting and working on agility drills and things like that than just, you know, hanging out with your teammates throwing a football around.
Yeah, I'm kind of agree with you. I like the OTAs. You know, for these guys getting paid millions of dollars, I think they can, you know, part of that contract should be to practice in the off season. But Al, thank you so much for joining us this morning and talking a little Packers football. Glad to have you, and we'll get you back on again sometime.
Hey, thanks, Brian. It was a pleasure. You do a great job, so keep it up.
Thank you. See you later.
All right.
Al Bracco of allgreenbaypackers.com. And like I said, next week, I believe we're going to have Adam Cech and Thomas Hobbs on the show next week from allgreenbaypackers.com as we kind of highlight their site and the rest of the Packers blogosphere eventually here. I'm glad Al brought this up. It's a topic I've, you know, talked about in the past. It's probably been a year or more since we've last kind of brought this up, and it hasn't gotten much attention this year because there haven't been actual, you know, OTAs or mini camps. Aaron Nagler, my colleague here at Cheesehead TV, very outspoken on the topic, you know, kind of like, you know, doesn't feel, you know, practices for professionals are unnecessary. Not to say he doesn't believe they shouldn't practice at all in the off season, but perhaps it goes overboard. And you know, like Al, I'm kind of I disagree respectfully. You know, I as I said, these guys, you know, many of them making millions, you know, not all of them are, but I mean, the minimum, they're making over, you know, $250,000 more than the, you know, 90% of society, at least. So I think that, you know, you're making that much money. We can expect these guys to be working in the off season. Not to say they shouldn't get time off. They should have plenty of time off after a long, grueling season. They should have months off, and they do. But, you know, after, you know, 2 months is over in the off season, I think it's okay to expect these guys to practice in a team environment and, you know, not necessarily practice, but watch video and things like that. I think that's fine. You know, it keeps them in one place in Green Bay. It keeps them out of trouble, you know, somewhat at least, you know, keeps them healthy and in shape and things like that. And, you know, I think that's fine. You know, I think it's kind of always bothered me. The OTA, you know, mini camp in the past has been mandatory and OTAs have been voluntary. And while, not, you know, usually over 90% of the players show up for OTAs, you know, it always gets so much attention about these guys who don't do it. And that bothers me. I just, it doesn't sit well with me that it's voluntary and it causes friction. You know, perhaps if you add up all this, you know, OTAs, mini camps together, all those practices, you know, maybe they cut it back a little bit. You know, I would be okay with that if they had a few fewer practices or something like that. But I think kind of all of it should probably be mandatory rather than, you know, voluntary. So, you know, it just, it causes unnecessary friction because, you know, all the time it gets so much attention at this time of year, the May-June time frame in a normal year when there's practices and mini camps, that, you know, the guys who stay away, you know, get so much of attention. You know, it used to be that Al Harris especially would not participate in OTAs. You know, he'd simply just, you know, stay away, do his own thing. And not to say he wasn't staying in shape, but, you know, it just bothers me, gets to me a little bit. I don't think it should be that way. I just see here that mentioning Blog Talk Radio, David did here, and I should have mentioned that with when Al was on. Al is also part of Cheesehead Radio on Blog Talk Radio, along with many of our friends here: Jamie Chores, CD Angeli, John Rahor, and Holly Phelps, and they do a great job. Just had Tom Crabtree on the other night. I listened to part of it. I didn't get a chance to listen to the whole thing, but that is fantastic. You know, Tom Crabtree, such a stand-up guy, that he would join Cheesehead Radio, and all the things he's done for people via Twitter, via social networking, has been fantastic. So it's great to see Tom Crabtree doing that. And it was a good interview. Glad to hear the things he's been doing. Of course, the upcoming Tom Crabtree book club, reading Area 51, to be held here at Cheesehead TV. Going to have a live blog and have Tom on and talk about the book and perhaps maybe talk a little bit of football. I don't think they're going to talk too much football. Not going to bother Tom with that, but a little bit perhaps might sneak in. So, you know, folks, it's not quite 9 o'clock, but I'm going to cut it short here slightly and, you know, wish everybody a happy Memorial Day weekend. It's one of the best weekends of the year, I think. Summer starting, you know, as I always say, summer starts on Monday. Don't look at what the calendar says. You know, you actually look in the calendar, it's a, you know, the official start of summer sometime in mid-June, something like that. Nah, this, for me, summer starts on Monday. Memorial Day to Labor Day is summer to me. So enjoy it, folks. I'm going to be at the Brewers game tonight. I'll say hi if I see you there. So excited tonight. Big time Timmy Jim is pitching. Tim Lincecum is the Brewers take on the defending World Series champions this weekend. So I'll see you later, folks. Have a good weekend. We'll see you next Tuesday. See ya.